Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Today is June 23rd. Thank you so much for tuning in to FetLife Station Internet Radio. You're listening to Life Without Parole. That's the name of the show, LWAP Radio. I'm Stacey Mandel. I'm in Philadelphia, where it is still a Philly thing, and I co-host the show with Robert Groves, a.k.a. Reentry Rob. Rob is about 26, 27 years down on a life without the possibility of parole sentence at SCI Phoenix. And today we are pleased to feature our third female guest from SCI Muncie, Ms. Doris Williamson. And she is also serving a life without parole sentence. So she's going to be up first. And then Rob will be calling in around 9:15. And then we'll have the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Basim Hassan. Basim is a Pennsylvania Prison Society volunteer monitor, which means that he visits incarcerated people at various institutes to address their needs relating to prison conditions. And without further ado, I would like to welcome Ms. Doris Williamson from Muncie to the show.
Good morning, Ms. Williamson. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning, Jason.
Yes, thank you. I'm great. Thank you for being on the show. If you could start off by please telling our listeners how old you are now and how long you've been incarcerated for.
Okay. First of all, my name is Doris Williamson. My OC number is OC2107. It's my inmate number. I was 36 years old when I came to Muncie. I am now 68 years of age. All that I have accomplished since I've been here at SCI Muncie in 1994, I completed anger management.
Well, before you get into that, we'll get to that in a moment. Can you just share with us the context of your life situation, you know, when you committed your offense?
I committed my offense August of, trying to figure out what month it was, 1992.
Right. And what was your life like then?
Things weren't together, like, you know, as it should be because of alcohol. I had a lot of alcohol issues, drinking issues. Behind the fact the way my life was as growing up, you know, I took, you know, to take care of my mom. She was diabetic. She took sick. She was on dialysis. And by me being the youngest child, everything seemed like it was on me. You know, because I was the only one actually left in the household, me and my older sister. But she didn't stay home as much. My older sister, Elizabeth. My sister, Willamay, was married. My sister, Naomi, was married. They weren't staying at the household at the time. So it was just me, my mother, my father, and two of my brothers, Moses and my brother, June. My brother, Robert, was married. He's my youngest brother.
This is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Muncie. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
So you're talking about how you were the youngest. I think you've told me you were the youngest of 11, correct?
Right.
And so you were the youngest.
That's my responsibility for me.
Yeah.
At the time at, you know, 17 years old, yeah, that's a big responsibility.
Okay, so you were 17 and you were the primary caregiver for your mother who was very ill.
Yes, yes. When my mother passed away, I was 20 years of age at that time. She passed away.
And what about your father?
My father, I was 24 when he passed away. I had to take care of him, too, by me being the youngest child and that, you know, home under their care.
Did you?
Like I said, everybody else was married off, and they had their own issues and, you know, household to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Were there other deaths in your family?
Beg your pardon?
Any other deaths in your family?
At that time, no.
Okay.
My mom and dad.
Okay, I remember you telling
me. My sister.
Yes.
Yeah, my sister.
Yes.
My sister. My mother and my sister died like 4 months apart. My mother died November the 23rd, 1975.
Okay. So was this relevant to you and your alcoholism, do you think?
Yes, yes. That's when it started after I lost my mother.
Okay.
My sister, she died July 2nd of 75. So it's like four months apart. They had double death in that year.
This is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Muncie. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Okay, Doris, I think we have a little bit of a picture of what your life was like, you know, and in terms of your addiction and, you know, leading up to your offense. Can you talk about the transition when you were sentenced? How difficult was the transition, you know, going from your life of freedom, you're in your 30s at this point, to suddenly being sentenced to a life without parole sentence?
Well, at first it really didn't hit me, you know, because I, you know, completely understood everything at that time by me being, you know, the age that I was. That, you know, because my brother and them, you know, they told me that I wonder if she really knew that this sentence made the rest of her life, she really understand it. But at that time, I really didn't understand it. But, you know, after a while, after being up here, you know, my first 5 years, I really understood a year. You know, am I ever going to, you know, do what I got to do to try to get out of here, you know, make it out of here now? You know, and I prayed about it long.
And were you addicted when you went into prison?
No.
So you were clean at that time? Okay.
No. No, like withdrawal or nothing, no. Because, I had, like, therapy, you know, treatment, you know. You know how they need therapy treatment? I'm going to tell you, I really wasn't messed up like that, like, if you was on heroin or whatever. Alcohol is much different from that, you know.
Right. I just meant, were you still addicted to alcohol when you were sentenced? You still there, Doris?
Yes, I
okay.
am.
Okay, so let's talk about life in prison. Could you please share with the listeners, what is living in prison for this long for you? I think it's been almost three decades. What's it been like for you psychologically?
Well, I'm saying I have learned to adjust with the help of God, though, for real, because my music keeps me going also, too, because I play guitar. So, you know, I go to church on Sundays, and, you know, I'm doing everything I can to stay out of trouble, you know, away from misconduct, and all. So far, I'm doing well, you know. RA2, I've never been to the RA2. That's solitary confinement where they take you. I never was there since I've been here, the whole 32 years. So, you know, in other words, I'm under a role model in me. That's what I'm under. actual. That's what most of the officers consider me as long as I've been here. Under the way I carry myself here in the prison.
You said a role model inmate.
Yes, role model.
Yep.
Yeah, don't, you know,
I'm just I'm repeating it. That's all.
Role model.
Yep.
That means not, you know, do positive things, stay out of trouble. In other words, stay out the way. You know what I mean? Getting misconduct or getting in trouble, getting yourself involved with bad people. And I try to watch my company, the people that I be around. Because everybody here ain't what you think they are. But this is women prison. It's not as bad as, you know, I think being incarcerated in a men's prison, because I think it's different. It's much different. We're not behind bars, for number one. We are in, like, I would say, cells, rooms at Muncie. Yeah. That's where Muncie was built. Like, the unit that I'm in is built something like the county where I'm from, Philadelphia County Pig, with a tier, you know, bottom tier, top tier, the rooms.
So, can you...
First floor, second floor, you know.
Yeah.
It's more on a different level than it is a men's prison.
I see.
Like, you would think that we're behind bars, but we're not. You know, we're behind the...
Well, you're still behind walls.
Wire fence, yeah. Behind that, but, yes. You know, as far as, like, bars and stuff like that, no.
Okay.
Most men's prisons is made like that. Women here at SCI Muncie is not built like that.
Right. Okay, so let's... I just want to save time so that you can also talk about, you know, despite you being locked up and behind walls and behind, you know, barbed wire, tell us about any children. You have children, grandchildren?
Oh, I have six grandchildren. My oldest grandchild, Dorothea, she's 33 years old. At that time, she was a year and a half when I was arrested. And she's been up here to see me once when she was little, but she, you know, not since then, because she has her own family right now, and she's doing a lot of things, you know, trying to get her life together, and I understand, but we still stay in contact with each other through, you know, Zoom visits and so on.
Yeah, you know, what's it like having a relationship, you know, by Zoom?
Well, you get to see, you know, you get to see the person, you know, but it's still not like being there with her as she grew up. You know, that'd be hard to explain that to her. You know, once I get out of here, I could never be able to explain it to her.
Do you think you've influenced your children and grandchildren, even though you're in prison?
Yes. Yeah, because they talk to me a lot. You know, we have phone calls. I talk to them on the phone. They plan on coming up for my graduation, which only two of them can come. It's
so,
invited. You know, invite two people from your family.
Let's talk about your graduation. Tell us about that, and then tell us about other accomplishments that you've managed to do while in prison.
Well, I managed to do technology class. I did AOD, drug and alcohol, back in 2014. I completed a certificate for that. I did Pathway to Success. I completed that. I also worked on CK, that's Central Kitchen, for 18 years. And I held a job down ever since I've been there for the whole entire 32 years I've been working.
Wow.
I did janitorial work in the sewing factory.
And
I worked there for 9 years.
And this graduation, is that for your GED?
Yes, it is. That's October.
How long have you been working on that?
Oh, I've been working on it a while, because at that time, back like in 96, I was on psych drugs, and I had to like clear my mind. I couldn't concentrate on schoolwork. So that's why it took me so long to get it together, but I finally did. So
wait, you started it, or like, Just tell us approximately how many years you've been working on it.
On my...
You have 1 minute left.
Precisely five.
Okay. So before we go, you're going to only have 1 minute left. Is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners about who you are today, Doris?
Not the same as it was since I came here. You know, I'm a changed person on the man, the all the way around the board. I can never be who I was. I changed mentally and spiritually.
Yeah. And anything
people that know me even say it, you know? And some of the officers, I get their compliments from some of them since I've been here.
Anything that you would do with your freedom if you were given a second chance?
Tell the world how it is. You know, since I've been here, all that I went through, so young people...
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Thank you, Doris. So hard on my count here. We've barely been speaking for even 14 minutes, and I know she's supposed to get 15 minutes. So I don't know why she's cut off like that, what the timing is, but please don't go anywhere, listeners. When we come back, we'll take a short musical break, and when we come back, I'll be speaking with Doris's daughter, Benika. So please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going home. Everything that I see, I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. Exactly who you could be. So just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going home.
Actually, he's calling in right now.
Because you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Oh, just hold on, I'm going home. Hold on, I'm going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, I'm going home.
Hello, listeners. We are back. This is the Life Without Parole show. Thanks for staying, on the line and keeping yourself plugged into us. We had a switcheroo here. Unfortunately, Doris's daughter, Benika, is not able to join us. So we're going to go with Rob. Rob,
with me anyway.
Yeah, but I thought that we were going to be able to get Benita, but yes.
No doubt. That's unfortunate. And we'll try to go ahead and get her on another time, you know.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing this morning? How are the listeners? Good morning. Good morning, all my listeners. So how did everything go with Ms. Doris Williamson?
It's really, I love that she's another female that we're able to interview and just get her perspective to hear about how things are for her and how it's different compared to men. She was talking a little bit about how she's not behind bars, but they're in rooms on tiers. And just some of her, she said, you know, it's not as bad here as the men's prison. Which is just interesting, you know, to hear her perspective because, you know, she hasn't been in a men's prison.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
I think a lot of times that just comes from, and it goes back to why we do what we do. People have no idea what really transpires behind bars. They see what they see on TV. They see what they read in newspapers. They see what they see on TV. And that's what they go with. I actually would probably disagree. I think that the women actually have it a lot harder than the men do in the prisons. And I tell you all the time, you know, that I swear I marvel at the strength of those women, you know, that are serving, you know, life without parole or just time in general. You know, because, yes, I'm a father, but the connection, you know, a mother instinctually has with her children is like something that you can't compare. And I couldn't imagine, I love my children, I love my family, but it's something about a mother, and this is something that, you know, that I know you can talk to, that imagine being incarcerated for 20, 30, 40 years, sometimes more, and to actually have something that you carried, a human being that you carried around for 9 months, that you cared for, that you loved, that you had a planned future for, and then to be in here and to try to keep that same connection. I couldn't
this
imagine.
This is a call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Yeah, and as far as the violence goes, it seems like the women penitentiaries are, you know, a lot wilder than the men. And that goes back to, like, you know, what we were talking about, actually not knowing what's going on.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, of course, to play devil's advocate with you, you've never been in a women's prison either.
Right.
But I know I'm, you know, getting ready for a future interview, interviewing another woman named Marie Scott, who will be on our show. And she's detailed for me in some of our conversations exactly what does go on in terms of the abuse of women.
Right.
Going back to your point, I mean, women are just more vulnerable because of our physicality. And then, women tend to be incarcerated for more addiction related offenses than violent offenses. And so then they're, you know, being abused, and re-triggered for, you know, circumstances similar to what they went in with. Yeah, so, well, speaking, I was just going to touch, too, on what you said about being a mother. I think Doris mentioned, she said 6 or 7 great-grandchildren. Benika is her only daughter. And I know she's very proud of her daughter. She told me she was going on about how her daughter is a counselor, and she just got another degree, and her daughter is helping people and serving people in social services. And how proud that makes her. So I just wanted to share that with everyone.
Absolutely.
This is a call
so
from
she,
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional
going
Institution.
As far as her
this call is
and
subject to
like
recording
that,
and
at,
monitoring.
At Muncie, is she further in education, or do they have any type of higher education, such as Villanova, like we had here?
That's a good question. She didn't touch on higher education. It's taken her 5 years to get her GED, which she's about to get. She's graduating any moment now.
Congratulations.
I think in a couple weeks she's allowed to have two people come, so she has two family members coming. But it's, 5 years for a GED. The other thing is she mentioned that she worked for about 20 years in the kitchen. In the prison.
Wow.
So it's hard to work and learn at the same time.
Well, go ahead. I want to tie something into kind of like the food, the nutritional fact, but also want to talk about also the why sometimes education takes so much longer for those who are serving life incarceration or just serving long term in general. And if you don't mind, I want to tie in the fact that if a life sentence is, I tell you this all the time, if a life sentence is simply to ensure that particular individuals are removed from society, we are failing horribly as a system. If you use like that early education model parents utilize right for their children, let's just use preschool for that matter. The longer one is exposed to educational programming, the more likely they're going to continue this trend. When we come to prison, if we're thrown right into it, if you allow us to go ahead and get our GEDs, programming groups and stuff like that, that not only that helps us as far as getting immediately right on track, getting the skills, getting the know-how, and not only having that for our own particular reasons, but to also make sure we pass it on to the younger population and people that are coming through prisons. So let's just use this for example. Most prisons withhold education and rehabilitation programs for those who are serving long terms, right? Or just say ineligible for parole consideration. So you take someone who's sentenced in their late teens, early 20s, and these are the younger generation I'm talking about. If they're now in that care, custody, control of the DOC, if those lifers are afforded the same programming opportunities, the long-termers become the mentors and the stabilizing force within the prison environment itself. If you go back, right, the Bureau of Justice Statistics, right, I keep a lot of these stats, only 46% of those incarcerated states have a high school education.
Yeah.
And the reason that number's staggering, right, 800 people per month statewide get paroled.
Yeah.
So it plays an integral role, not in their own personal success, but all stakeholders are involved. Now, with Doris's situation, and I can't speak to it, but I'm going to speak to some of the situations I know here and the situations here.
Really quick for a second. I'm sorry to interrupt. Just real quick. I also want to just add, she was the sole caretaker of her dying mother. Her mother died when she was 20, but she was a teenager when she was the youngest child in the house. So she took care of her mom with dialysis and everything. I mean, that was her full-time job. So that's also, and then you add to that,
because she wouldn't be able to, she probably couldn't go to school because she had to be caretaker for her family. That's a lot of things that also that are put on the women, single mothers, stuff like that.
Because she stepped up and she served and took care of her mother, then she was incarcerated.
Right. Going back to this education, Stace, if you go to school in prison, then you don't get to go to work. That's how it is here. So if you have a job, you can't go to school. You can't do both, because if you're going to school, they give you, around $17, $18 a month or something like that. So I don't know how they do it at the female prison. But if you go ahead and if you're going to get your GED, you can go in the morning from 9 to 11 or from 8 to 10:45, and then you can go back down to 1 to 3. But that's if they have the proper staffing for the institution. So maybe she was going to get her GED half of the day and then also going to work, because a lot of people don't understand this. We don't have a lot of support on the outside, and the ones that do are blessed. So then you have to go ahead and get your little pennies so you can get your little toiletries, your cosmetics, and your food and stuff like that. And as far as the nutrition goes, I want to make sure I save some time. I want to go ahead and speak to the fact that on Juneteenth, I want to highlight Juneteenth. But Aramark, it holds a monopoly on all DOC-provided foods. Right, the majority of our foods are soy. Everything's processed. Right, there's like There's like no real meats. Each meal must meet a certain calorie criteria, right? If we do get vegetables, they're usually overcooked. Fruits are scarce. We do get a lot of bananas, and I'm thankful for any food you have because you have brothers and sisters that don't get any type of outside support. Access is an outside order, outside vendor that allows us to order like similar foods that aren't on our regular institutional commissary form, but that's like a 50% to like a 100% markup. And to tie it all in, commissary, we have cakes, potato chips, processed meats, which ultimately lead to diabetes, high blood pressure. Now, we do have some good pouch foods such as tuna. We got a yellowfin, you know. So if you are going to take the routes of eating anything that would probably be nutritional and kind of good for your health, then you'd have to stay in like kind of the fish market. Everybody in the fish area, and everybody doesn't eat fish.
Right.
So, you know, if you don't have any outside support, Stace, it's pretty much in bad shape.
For people who are listening, when you say outside support, I know what you mean. I just want to make sure people understand, like, outside support meaning other people giving you money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Stace, so I want to take time, right, to recognize the historical holiday, Juneteenth. I kind of wrote a piece on it, and it was just celebrated Monday. And Juneteenth celebration end of slavery here in the United States is also known as Emancipation Day, Freedom Day, and Juneteenth Independence Day. Although Emancipation Proclamation and the slavery when President Lincoln signed it in 1863, many enslavers continued to hold enslaved black people captive even after the announcement. But on June 19, 1865, Major General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas and announced the end of Civil War and the end of slavery. And Juneteenth became a symbolic date representing Afro-American freedom. Finally, in June 2021, last year, it became a federal holiday. Now, I want to segue to the criminal justice system, and while I may, you know, establish a correlation between the two, I clearly understand the difference. I just want to provide some historical context on the racial disparities and injustices that still exist here in Philadelphia and across the nation. The American prosecution and policing systems was tasked in part with enforcing the practice of slavery. That's a lot to digest, I know, but follow me for a second. The death machine, better known as the criminal legal system, has served as a cornerstone of structural racism and mechanism through which inequalities are equated and sustained, and Philadelphia is no exception. Let's go back to the period they considered legalized slavery. Early police forces patrolled for blacks who escaped their enslavers. When the Civil War ended, slavery in 1865, states around the country passed laws designed to maintain control over livelihoods of black people and their movement through society. Lawmakers wrote and enacted something called the Black Codes and also Jim Crow laws, which police and public prosecutors enforced. Convict leasing was a practice in which black people were arrested and found guilty of minor crimes such as loitering and then leased out to perform forced unpaid labor. So the same people who were so-called freed on the Emancipation Proclamation were re-enslaved through the contact with police and the courts. And I'm going to end it here.
You have 1 minute left.
Eastern State Penitentiary in Philly opened up in Fairmont in 1832. This new practice of enslavement through imprisonment was well thought out and strategically enforced. Here we are 191 years later since the first penitentiary was built in Philly. We're now up to 24 states, and that's across the state correctional institution across Pennsylvania. So, you know, sorry, you know, time's up, but y'all already know, same place, same time, same fight. Everything's unrehearsed. Why? Because obviously I live it. Stay tuned. Station, Brother Bassin will continue to discuss the fight for my sisters at Muncie, Cambridge, Springs, and across the state. Stay out of the rain, y'all. You too, safe. Peace and blessings to all, you know, and y'all already know, Reentry Rob, I'm out.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay. God bless to all. See y'all next week.
Thank you for using. The caller has hung up. Thank you for using. Securus. Goodbye.
And we're going to go take a quick musical interlude and we'll be right back. Please don't go anywhere.
Me, I want your high love and emotion endlessly. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. Cause you're
and I see I want your high love and emotion. Endlessly, I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion. Endlessly, 'cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me.
Welcome back, listeners. This is LWOP Radio. Good morning, Basim.
Good morning, Stacy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Everyone, again, I introduced you earlier, but this is Basim Hassan, and you are a Pennsylvania Prison Society volunteer monitor. And I know you do a lot more than that particular role. You have your eyes and ears on the ground, and you know everything that's going on. So that's why we wanted to talk with you.
Good morning, LWOP listeners. My name is Basim Hassan. I'm a volunteer with the Pennsylvania Prison Society, and I travel across the state on my own volition, responding to requests from different inmates and family members that request my presence because of different and a variety of needs that the people who are incarcerated may need at any particular time.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit, since this was a show interviewing Doris, and Doris is our third female individual who is serving a life without parole sentence. You and I have visited Muncie together.
Yes, we have.
Let's, and you've met with many more women than I have. I wanted to see if we could just kind of talk a little bit about what it's like for women in prison, the conditions. What should we start with?
Let me begin by saying the conditions for women who are incarcerated in the state of Pennsylvania, and I have not been to Cambridge Springs as of yet. I intend to go as soon as I possibly can, but for Muncie, which I have been inside of Muncie over a dozen times, I've taken several different tours of Muncie. Muncie, if I was to describe Muncie in one word, it would be deplorable.
Deplorable.
The things that I see, the experiences that I have, the administration is quite cordial with me. But outside of that, the conditions of the women are deplorable. It is so deplorable that I make it my business to try to, if not go in person, stay in contact with certain individuals whom I deem important enough as inside leaders that I try to keep an open dialogue with these women so that I know what's going on inside of there and what can I do personally or what can I do to forward the information to my superiors at the prison society so that they can approach the administration with some sort of resolution to various situations.
Mm-hmm. So when I was there with you, all of the women that we met with, or that I met with, there was one theme in particular I remember that was a common denominator, the topic of nutrition. And Rob and I talked about this a little bit when he was just on. They mentioned that, first of all, you know, as Rob outlined, they really have poor nutrition there. Poor nutrition.
I can attest to that.
They were concerned about vitamins and nutrients, literally, because it's not like they can just pop a multivitamin like we can. But they have certain underlying health conditions, and then they have health conditions they feel like are actually created because of their poor diet. Diabetes, for example, you know, hypertension.
Yes. So
I'm going to pause in case there's something you want to add there, but then there were also some other things they brought up that I thought were interesting.
I thought that the most interesting aspect of that conversation was the mere fact of how much land
Yes, that's where I was going to go.
They have, and programs that they have implemented in the past that they just came to an abrupt halt on, programs that would help to steer the health problems away from being as deteriorating as they are by implementing the gardening program.
Yes.
That we were advised of. And they constantly make requests to re-implement that program, but it appears that the administration, for whatever reason, does not allow them to move forward with that. Well, and that's sad.
Yeah, and they were talking about how there is actually produce grown on site, and it gets donated out.
Yes.
So they are growing produce, because when you go to Muncie, there's land, like you said. There used to be farming programs back in the day. I don't know how long ago that was, at prison, you know, and they would actually leave and be able to farm. But now, to this day, right now, there is apparently fresh produce being grown that the incarcerated population does not have access to. They don't have fresh produce, and it's being donated out. So right. I just wanted to like highlight that, because I find that to be unbelievable.
Well, you know, when I hear about that, and, you know, my reflection on that is one of, if there's nothing wrong with sharing the wealth of what comes out of the ground, but if there's growth going on with vegetation and it's being offered to anyone outside of the prison, why not allow enough growth to go on that you can supply the common inmates with vegetables? Some people may not want to eat that boiled and broiled food all day, every three meals. So why not have a fresh, clean vegetable, fruit and vegetable stand at some portion of the food dispensary, so that those that don't want to eat that boiled and overcooked food, as Rob was saying, they would be allowed to eat the raw vegetation. And there's nothing wrong with eating the raw vegetation, as long as it's clean properly and doesn't contain a bunch of pesticides.
Right. And they can also, since they work in the kitchen, they certainly have before cooked their own produce. They can do it again. It makes me think about our most vulnerable, you know, women and children. Children in schools now, we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go with school lunches. You know, ketchup has been considered a vegetable for a long time. And that's finally, you know, that's changed. So what about women in prison? So I would argue that they're even more vulnerable maybe than our children. And they certainly deserve, we need advocacy for just basic nutrition.
And we're just on the subject of food.
That advocacy, let's keep going.
That advocacy can be extended in a thousand different ways. You know, for each individual, there is a different need. And women especially should not be treated as they are treated. And I can see from both perspectives, the men's perspective of how they live in the incarcerated world, as well as the women. And I would say that the women are treated much harsher than the men, much harsher.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples of that? I mean, I was just reading. I mean, there's a couple things. Well, there's a couple things that might come up for you. I mean, the one that comes up for me is women telling me literally about physical abuse and the emotional, the verbal abuse that they suffer at the hands of mainly men who are their correctional officers. And most women who've been in prison were also, not most, but a lot of women who were in prison were also abused and involved in, you know, nonviolent crimes, but, you know, addictive substances and abusers. So it's very particularly traumatizing for them. And then the other one that you might not be aware of, being that you're male, is just an article I read, actually. I just read about menstruation and how that's actually weaponized in prison. So feel free to speak about what you want to. What do you want to talk about?
I'm very familiar with that as well. But one thing that comes to mind, the most devastated case that comes to mind, without mentioning any names, there was a lady who came to prison as a young, stable-minded person. This lady was abused by a correction officer at Muncie. This is documented. I mean, this can be, it can be found if it's researched properly. The inmate became pregnant. They found out it was the guard. The guard wound up getting fired, but not serving any time. He was fired. The child was actually, although the inmate couldn't keep the child was taken by the corrections officer's family and raised. The child grew up, visit the mother quite often after a certain age, and the woman today is still incarcerated, I believe, and has like really have lost her mind. She's like mentally torn up, cannot function as a regular person because behind all of the abuse and all. And from the stories that I was told by those who were there when this person came early in her sentence, that she was she did get released. She's on the streets, but her family cannot take care of her because of her mental illness. She has a very deep mental illness that does not allow her to function normally. And it's just, her case alone is like at the top of my thought pattern with what goes on in terms of the abuse of women in these prisons.
We had Sarita Miller on a couple of months ago.
Sarita talked a bit about
The abuse that takes place inside of prisons for women. And again, it's not just the physical, which is still rampant. And I'm preparing Marie Scott, who's also at Muncie, to be interviewed soon. And Marie Scott has told me that she's been in every single, you know, part of her problems in prison are that she can't stop herself from jumping in to help another female resident when they're being physically assaulted, because she was physically assaulted, you know, before prison by people in her life. And she knows what that feels like. So she has to, she can't stop herself from jumping in. Right. But then that, of course, that creates further punishment. So, you know, imagine you're a woman and you're doing your time, you're being abused, and you really have, you know, when you're being abused, I mean, you're going to fight back to protect yourself. It's not even it's not a thinking process. It's just immediate fight. And it's how our brains, our amygdalas are designed to keep us alive, is we're going to protect ourselves and we're going to protect others. And then you're not just punished for that with further, consequences, but then you're still kept in that same environment with nothing changed. So there's that. And then she also, Sarita talked about just, there's a lot of verbal abuse.
Yeah, this
that's more insidious.
Like I say, when I'm at the institution,
harassment,
a lot of times, they curtail the harassment, but then you can look at the body language, and the body language exhibits the mere fact that it speaks to the incarcerated women in a way that a mother looks at a child when a child is acting out in public. A mother gives that child a certain look, and that child knows to take it from 10 right. down to 2. And I have witnessed this myself inside of those institutions. And I try to get as much information as I can while I'm there to try to combat whatever it is that's going on. You can't win each and every battle that you fight with them, because the DOC, the Department of Corrections, they are in constant control of each and every aspect of whatever it is that falls under their jurisdiction. So, you know, I mean, just to see somebody that you may know, you may have known this person. I'm 65 years old. I may have known a person as a child or went to school with a person, and they are in at Muncie, and I could not just walk up to that person and get embrace them and give them a hug and tell them, you know, that I truly support them, or, you know, they just won't allow that. That they call it, like, it's borderline sexual attachment there, you know, right. And it's sad because women are more emotional than men, and the emotions that you see traveling through that prison for the few moments or the hour or the 2 hours, whatever time that I'm in there, it's heart-wrenching. You know, you walk out of that gate, you walk out of there torn. You walk out of there torn with the reflection of, I have to come back. I have to keep visiting this place. No matter how many times I come, I have to keep coming back and showing support and giving these women a glimmer of hope and keep that flicker of light within their heart to say that, let me get one foot out the gate and I can pull the other one behind me.
Yeah, it's hard to keep talking after that. It's like you just want to kind of sit with it. But for the sake of the show, is there anything else, Basim, that you'd like to put out there before I start wrapping up? I appreciate you very much, by the way.
I appreciate you as well, Stacy. We're in the trenches together, struggling. There's some things that I want to talk about, but I'm not. I can't mention it right now. I'm really trying to bite my tongue on it. But there's a project that I'm trying to work on to help the women, and I think I better just keep it under wraps until I get a green light on it, because I just don't want to blow it before it's actually ignited.
Right. Well, so if anybody's out there listening and would like to get in touch with you, Basim, they can. I'm going to give our contact information in a few minutes at the end of the show, and you're welcome to reach out and contact me, and I can get the word to Basim, because Basim is a doer. He takes action. So we're not just talking here. Rest assured. We're actually, Basim is pretty much, I know that you're out there every day doing something. It might look different each day, you know, but you're doing something every day. And that's why I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this brings us to the end of today's Life Without Parole LWAP radio episode. It was a special one. We hope you'll join us same place, same time, like Rob says, every Friday, 9 a.m. on FetLife Station. And I also wanted to mention again the Groves Notebook, which this show is an extension of. So the Groves Notebook is a Facebook page, and it details and provides documentation of an incarcerated person's full transformation. These are men and women who have served at least 20 years on a life without parole sentence. And it's every certificate showing every piece of education, every training, every recognition, award, work, and all of that. So we can actually have some visual confirmation that people are not the same as when they first went in and are worthy of consideration for their freedom. So this is on the Groves Notebook Facebook as a page. You can submit, if you're listening, a profile of someone who is serving life without parole to be on the Groves Notebook. You just go to the administrator section of the Facebook page and contact Suave Gonzalez. You can connect with me, Stacy, at Your Big Mind on Instagram. You can also connect with Rob, Reentry Rob Groves, at the connectnetwork.com. He's at SCI Phoenix. His email he likes me to give out is robertgroves731@gmail.com. And finally, thank you to Lester Kinney on FLBigStation.com, and we wish you all peace.
Exactly who you could be. So just hold on, going home. Just hold on.